Just like the synagogue you grew up in, right? More or less the same. So several of you asked me as I was going around trying to clear the way along with the Torah, whether I was going to talk about the article I wrote about for the Jewish Journal about my mother. And the answer is a little bit, yeah. And I'm going to begin by telling a story that I've told here before and that I tell in the journal, and I even told last night, but I enjoy it too much not to tell it since I have the chance to. As many of you know, close to 30 years ago, my mother had a debilitating stroke and she has aphasia. She can't speak. So she can get out a word, sometimes a phrase, occasionally a sentence. Sometimes it's not what she meant to say and sometimes it is. And it's been an enormously frustrating and difficult and painful thing in many ways. A few years ago, we took her out, my brothers and I have three brothers, we took her out for her birthday in Philadelphia, which is where we all grew up. And at the end of the meal, my brothers and I took out our wallets, and she looked at us disgustedly and went, "No." So we thought, really? My mother's going to pay for dinner, for her birthday dinner? But we weren't going to fight with her. We put our wallets away. And she looked at each of us in turn and went, "Dessert!" Now, why do I tell you that story, apart from the fact that I love that story? Is that it reminds us, among other things, that it really doesn't matter how bad your situation, there are still pleasures and things to be grateful for. Sometimes we don't look at that at all. We do the exact opposite. I don't know how many of you remember the show Taxi. Taxi was a wonderful sitcom, and I remember many scenes, but one in particular struck me and stayed with me. It was when Louis, played by Danny DeVito, who is an irascible, difficult pain in the neck. That's what we say in the streets of Philadelphia, pain in the neck. He was trying to court Zena, Rhea Perlman, and she was leaving him, and she said, "I've had enough, I'm leaving." And he said, "Before you leave, I want to tell you what love is." And she said, "Louis, I have no patience for this. I'm leaving." And he said, "If you walk out that door, you will never know what love is, because I know." She said, "Really, you know what love is?" He said, "Yes, I know." So she slowly closes the door. She says, "Okay, you tell me, what's love?" He says, "Love is the end of happiness." But then he gives his definition. He says, one day you're sitting there and you're watching the Yankees and you're happy. And the next day you're in love, and because she's not sitting there next to you, you're miserable. And it occurs to me how often we define things actually by the negative, by the absence. You know the exercise where you walk in front of a big white wall and you draw a black dot and you ask people, what do you see? And they will all say a black dot. But of course, that's not what you see. What you see is a huge white wall and a tiny black dot. But in our lives, we do the same thing. The next time someone cuts in front of you, what do you say? Do you say, you know what? I live in the wealthiest country in the world. I'm not hungry. I'm healthy, I have people who love me, I'm driving a car, I have paved roads, there's air conditioning in my home, and I'm just grateful to God. Big deal, someone cut in front of me. No, you say, that miserable, you get angry and hurt, and all the blessings of your life disappear just like that. But the fundamental religious attitude The deepest and most important, without which someone can't be truly religious, is gratitude. To be grateful, because our lives are saturated, drenched with, overflowing with blessing. All the time, even in your hardest moments. I was thinking about this in part because, as some of you know, this week I flew back to the East Coast for one day to speak for about 2 or 3 minutes. And that's because 10 years ago, at my alma mater, the University of Pennsylvania, Michael Steinhardt, who is a philanthropist, donated the Hillel building. And they asked me to be the opening speaker at the Hillel. So 10 years ago, I flew to Philadelphia to speak. And as I finished speaking and sat down, my father, who at that time was still alive, my father and mother were there. He said to me, "Is anything wrong?" And I said, "No," and that's the last thing I remembered. I had a grand mal seizure and a couple of neurosurgeries. But now it's 10 years later. And in his apartment in New York, Michael Steinhardt was hosting about 70 or 80 people to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the Penn Hillel. And they asked me, "Do I want to come?" And I thought, I have to go. It's a Talmudic tradition that if you experience a miracle, you're supposed to go back to the place where you experienced it and thank God. So this was pretty close. So I went there just to say the Shehecheyanu. And then I turned around and flew back. And it was an incredible moment for me of expressing the gratitude that I felt just for being alive. Not for any specific blessing, but actually for every blessing, because every blessing is contingent on your being here to receive it. So I thought, all the blessings I have in my life, and I have many, are because 10 years ago, when I had that seizure at the Penn Hillel, half the people there were doctors. And they saved my life. This morning, we've been celebrating the State of Israel. I know we say it all the time, but you realize that we are the first people in thousands of years to be alive when there's a State of Israel. Like many profound truths, it's repeated so often that it loses its power. But think about this. Thousands of years where Jews dreamed and prayed and hoped and thought, but it never came true. And now it's true. I mean, I don't know how you feel about Hebrew rap. I thought it was fantastic. I don't know how you feel about Hebrew rap. But the fact that someone could sing in modern Hebrew 100 years ago, 200 years ago, was inconceivable. There was no such thing. There was no such thing. When you heard the beautiful rendition of Yerushalayim Shel Zahav, Jerusalem of Gold, you might not know that L'chol Shirayach Ani Kinor, for all your songs, I'm a harp, that was taken from the medieval poet, Yehuda Halevi, who wrote that about Jerusalem and traveled to Jerusalem, but there was no State of Israel there for him to be a part of if he ever got there. But of course, a miracle once achieved becomes a commonplace. And that's why periodically you have to renew your gratitude and your sense of appreciation. And that's part of what prayer is about. It's part of the blessing of our tradition. There's a Jewish law that my guess is none of you have ever observed. I certainly haven't. That if you have a field and you harvest your field and you forget some of the sheaves in the field or some of the fruit in the field or whatever it is that you're harvesting, if you forget it, you're not supposed to go back and get it. You leave it for the poor. One of the interesting things about this mitzvah is it's not a mitzvah that you can ever fulfill deliberately. You can never say, "I'm now going to forget some sheaves," because then you haven't forgotten them. So you ask yourself, what is the purpose of the mitzvah other than, obviously, to feed the poor, which is the main purpose? Who forgets some of their possessions? Only somebody who feels like they have so much that they can afford to forget them. It's a mitzvah where you have to feel abundance and feel blessed and feel grateful, and then sometimes you forget what you have. Believe me, even though everybody in this room probably forgets some things that they have, most of our ancestors didn't because they had so little. So it is a mitzvah that reminds us that we have so much that we might even forget. So let me remind you. We are among the luckiest human beings who have ever lived. And I don't know all of you. I don't know your life circumstance. I still say, if you are alive today, if you're in a secure building, an air-conditioned building, if you're alive in the time of modern dentistry and modern medicine, if you're alive in an age when you can listen to the music you want and speak the words you want and you are free, you are among the luckiest people who have ever lived. And yet, I know that even though we know this is true, if you go down to the parking lot now and you have a flat tire, and I'm no different. Well, I am different because I live across the street. I'm not driving home. But I'm better than you. No. I'm no different. If I have a flat tire, I don't say, I feel so blessed, dear God. I don't care. God bless you for wheels and cars. No. I say unprintable things that rabbis should not say. But I really do try to remind myself. When I see the mezuzah on my door, when I wear tzitzit, when I say a blessing, that we live in an age where all human beings in our world are fortunate, and Jews are fortunate beyond the wildest dream of our most imaginative ancestors. Yes, we all complain all the time. We get angry. We get bitter. We see the black dot in all our lives. If there's someone that doesn't like us or someone who says something bad or someone who limits us or blocks us in any way, that's all we focus on, the black dot. But really, how beautiful and wonderful it is to be alive. I want to close with one thing before the blessing. Those of you who were at the night, the Holocaust commemoration that the Iranian Federation put on, know that I recited a poem that comes from a book called I Never Saw Another Butterfly. It's a book of writings and poetry that they found when they tore up the floorboards of Theresienstadt, the concentration camps that were written by the children. And I want to recite to you a poem called The Bird Song that was written by a boy or a girl, we don't know, what age, 12, 13, 14, there in the worst place on earth. This is what that child wrote. He doesn't know the world at all. Who stays in his nest and doesn't go out. He doesn't know what birds know best or what I want to sing about, that the world is full of loveliness. When dewdrops sparkle in the grass and earth's a flood with morning light, a blackbird sings upon a bush to greet the dawning after night, and then I know how fine it is to live. So open up your heart to beauty. Go to the woods someday. And weave a wreath of memories there. And then, if tears obscure your way, you'll know how wonderful it is to be alive. Shehecheyanu.